Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Get all the latest football headlines and bite-sized opinion in the brand new Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith, Martin Grutten and a conveyor belt of guests as they dissect all the biggest stories in one small, perfectly formed package. Take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day to stay up to date with everything that matters in football. Whether it's a big result from the night before, a new excuse from Jurgen Klopp, a shocker of a VAR decision, or a new chapter in the ongoing Man United soap opera, we will cover it. All the latest news, every weekday lunchtime, on the Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Look for the Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. My name is Phil Whelans and we have played 3 games of football in 7 games. Here to discuss those 3 games of football are, as always, Jim Grant.
Good evening.
Hello, Jim. Everything all right?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Also with us this week, a wonderful guest of the podcast. He is a legendary radio producer and creator of podcasts. It's Mark Sandell.
Good evening.
Hello, Mark. And a very good friend of the podcast with us this week, it's Luca Berardi. Hello, Luca.
Good evening.
Luca is a fan of Inter Milan. Is that right?
West Ham as well, I mean.
And West Ham United. Yes, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So before we talk about those games, let me just read you something I found today. This weekend saw referee Andrew Madley bag a late winner at Stamford Bridge as European Super League side Chelsea overcame West Ham United, whose one-dimensional game plan of trying to win by playing football proved woefully inadequate against the West London money launderers, who for a long time were underwritten by the proceeds of crime. As is the case in the modern game, referee Madley was provided state-of-the-art support, his every decision monitored and subject to the approval of Chelsea's players, whose fans pushed a black man off the Paris metro singing, we're racist, and that's the way we like it. In a game where the coin toss was protested by Chelsea players and therefore given over to VAR and reversed, standout performers for Chelsea, who once tried to frame a referee and destroy his life by lying about him, were Edouard Mendy, who jealously safeguards his reputation as a top-flight goalkeeper by claiming that every goal he concedes is due to illness or injury, even those conceded during the warm-up. His history of trips, falls, and accidents in the workplace has caused MoneySupermarket.com to describe him as Simply's uninsurables. And he has earned himself the name Edouard Pretendi. Rhys James, known to his friends as Cheats James, and sometimes Rhys Feigns, though that works better written down, gave due consideration and then overturned Andrew Madley's original decision when, after a coming together with Mikel Antonio, he kicked out at the Jamaican international in a manner which would have had David Beckham sent off in France 1998. Judging this to be Antonio's fault because he did it and Antonio didn't, James raised his hands and shoved Antonio, another possible red card offence. Under advisement from James to review his conduct, Madley showed a yellow card to, that's right, Mikel Antonio. Thiago Silva, also known as Get Up, You Fucking Cheat, has extended his career at Chelsea, a club once captained by a man cleared of racism by VAR, even though everybody saw it, and who thought that by simply cosplaying a trophy-winning footballer, he'd be one, has extended his career into his late 30s by transitioning from doing stuff to pretending to have stuff done to him and asking for the people who didn't do it to be sent off. He is a piece of shit. Shergar was kidnapped and killed by John Hollins and Ian Hutchison, the latter of whom cooked and ate most of the Epsom Derby winner. Towards the end of the game, Kai Havertz was pushed by Tilo Kehrer, and after checking the clock to see how much time was left and waving to some friends in the crowd, Havertz suddenly threw himself to the ground in a manner that brought back terrible memories for Christian Eriksen. Referee Andrew Madley mistook this as a directive from Stockley Park and booked Tilo Kehrer. Solomon Kalou wrote a full-length script for a sequel to Love Actually. Final score, Chelsea 2, West Ham 1.
Was that the Daily Telegraph?
It's Henry Winter in the Times.
Oh, amazing. I only get the online edition, so maybe it's just
right,
in the
print. Yeah, I subscribe to it. So yeah, that's the full edition. Well, I mean, it's not often I agree with Henry Winter, but large sections of that I agreed with.
Yeah. There's a grain of truth.
Yeah, grain of truth. Absolutely, a grain of truth. So let's start with that game, and then we could go back to Aston Villa and work our way forwards via Tottenham Hotspur. So, yes, I mean, there was a lot of fury about our disallowed late goal. Everyone was talking about it. Match of the Day talked about it. Pundits talked about it. But, you know, nothing's going to change, is it?
No. I feel slightly guilty about slagging Shearer off last time on the podcast now, because he did at least, you know, properly say it how it should be said, didn't he, about that incident? And the point he made, which is a point very similar to the one that you made, Phil, is anybody who's actually had any experience of the game football would realise that Bowen has got to try and jump over an enormous keeper who's flying at him. And, there might be some contacts between them, but that doesn't make it a foul. It's ridiculous. No. I'm still fuming about it.
The argument that ex-pro should be on the VAR, you know, that the idea is that they should be part of the VAR decision, is rather destroyed if you listen to Graham Souness this morning.
Oh, what an idiot. Well, he's
Who's played the game, and he's no stranger to a set of studs himself, and he likes to, you know, and he's a big West Ham fan. We know that. He's always been a keen supporter of what West Ham are trying to do. And I think we're probably his second favourite team. But I think he's put that to one side on this occasion and said that the studs were showing. He can see why it was given. You know, so what I'm saying is that, and there will be other pros out there, ex-pros, who would say the same.
TalkSport pay their pundits to say controversial things, then. I don't think he really believes that at all, to be honest.
No, he's a bit clickbaity, isn't he? But you know, I mean, the issue is that it's now not doing its job anymore in spades after this sort of period last season where they said it might get a bit better and they were going to sort of allow a bit more flexibility and leeway. It's now not pulling out obvious errors. It's saying we disagree with the referee about this thing, that the referee's opinion is as valid as their opinion, but they go, no, we're just going to overturn that decision. It's sort of placing itself as somebody, either Shearer or Mika Richards or whoever was commentating, sort of said it's placing itself at the centre of the narrative. And I think that's right. Rather than assisting, it's putting itself at the centre of the kind of narrative of the match.
I think that's absolutely right. We've now had two goals chalked off for coming together of players. We talked about the Antonio one at Forest last time. But it really does seem to me a flawed use of video technology. It was supposed to correct glaring errors, and it was supposed to help referees when they haven't seen an incident or something has gone on that is clearly foul play or whatever. Outside the view of the referee. When a referee has seen an incident, has waved, played it louder to go on, and it's debatable, then that's not the job of VAR to intervene. That is going to destroy the game, I think, if that carries on. They've come out and apologised now, haven't they, and said lessons will be learned. But, you know, the points have gone. That I think if Benrahma's goal had stood as it should have done at Forest, I think we'd have gone on and won that game. I mean, it's an if, but I think we probably would. And I think we should have got a point yesterday. They weren't going to get another goal after that, I don't think. That was pretty much the last action of the game. So, you know, it's... Luca, is it as bad as this? Is it as shit as this in Italy? Or have they got it right?
Well, you know, we've had in the past, you know, we call it bar charts, you know, when you discuss infinitely about situations like the Chelsea penalty. The reality is that football is a dynamic game, right? And as Phil said, he was just trying to jump over a massive keeper and there was a little contact, but it was not influenced. It was not probably... He didn't even touch it relevantly enough to even move his arm. So it was like very venial. And it shouldn't have been called. It shouldn't have been VAR. But then put yourself in a position of the referee, right? So you made your decision and then you called into the VAR corner. So basically they are telling you are wrong. So... It is a difficult. It needs the referee should have had like the balls to say, "Oh no, I was right. I'm not going to change my decision." Yeah. But he shouldn't have been in that position at the start.
Luca, I think that's absolutely bang on. And I think the other issue is that you've got that hierarchy of referees. And my understanding is, what was it, Madley's seventh game or something? It was, you know, and whoever it was down at the other end in Hillingdon, you know, he is probably going to defer to that referee. And particularly if you're talking about match reports and all that kind of thing. Annoyingly, that in the nightmare that was that Saturday with the Newcastle decision as well, we saw a really good example of Michael Oliver going to for the first time, as far as I can recall, and saying, no, do you know what? I'm going to stick to my decision. Even that was quite a marginal, but he said, I'm going to stick to it. And, you know, there was a kind of sense on another day that would have been so good to have seen that.
Yeah, but Mark, you're right. I mean, Oliver, isn't he our FIFA referee or our UEFA referee? I mean, he's, you know, he feels secure in his position, don't he? And, you know, there's a real, clearly a major problem with this BGM or whatever they are, that they need to sort it out because they're just not serving the game properly at the moment, you know. And other sports get it right. I mean, you know, there are you can argue that, say, in cricket, it's a game with more natural breaks. It is a less dynamic game, Luca, obviously. But at least they, you know, in close LBW calls in cricket, they have a thing called it's the umpire's call. And if it's, you know, if it's sort of therefore it's in a bit of a grey area, we can't necessarily trust the technology is right. Well, you just go with what the on-field umpire has said. You don't overrule.
It's a soft signal, isn't it?
Umpire, it's called a soft signal. It's absolutely clear cut that he's made a mistake.
I think it's you know, I've said this so many times on podcast, slightly sick of saying it. Really, it's sort of it's the complete tail wagging the dog. It's a weird sort of populist idea that has gone, we hear you. We hear you going, the referee's a wanker. We know you hate referees. We're really desperately trying to fix this problem with referees being shit. We're going to take the responsibility away from them and give it to some other people. And you're going, that's not what we're asking for at all. Those songs have been sung since, you know, since football was invented. It doesn't actually, it's not personal. As I was talking about, you know, and giving the referee more power, not less power, is the answer to it. If, you know, that way lies madness. If you start, you know, we're going to take it away from the referee and give it to A, technology, but B, some other referees who can just disagree with them. I mean, it's just that way lies madness. I mean, I have to say, I think because we do talk a lot about VAR, it would be good to get to the football in a few moments. But, you know, someone on Facebook was, you know, just commenting on the Stop Hammer Time Facebook page and was saying it's really starting to become very depressing. you know, and I feel like this season already, just a few games in and a little bit last season, the kind of shithousery from teams now, the time wasting, the rolling around, the lying about being fouled, that compounded with the way VAR recovered a tiny bit and the Euros showed it being used well. But as if anything, it's just got worse this season. It's got worse. The problems have been highlighted. They said we're going to address them. And I think it's now actually worse. We've gone back to a badge thickness deciding offside decisions where we said we weren't going to do that. We said that we're going to give the attacking team more leeway. No. We're just back to going, oh, the thickness of his shoelace is over the kind of offside line. We've just gone back to it. And it's really making it dispiriting. The whole game has become very dispiriting now.
I'll take the shoelace point of view, but there is something to be said that even if it is a shoelace, it's still offside. And that at least that is a matter of fact. As you say, that something like this is a matter of interpretation. And let's be fair, looking at the Tottenham game, without VAR, it's a penalty to Tottenham, isn't it? That, you know, the one that's come off Cresswell's, face. So, and I don't, to a certain extent, as much as it winds me up, I just think, well, at least that is a factual observation. You've drawn these lines, I get it. But the other, when it's that a matter of that kind of interpretation, when it's so clearly 99.9% of people watching this are convinced it's one thing, that's when it gets absolutely stupid. And that inevitability, it's the same way that a goal scored now, the joy of it, you almost don't want to jump up because you think, well, in 4 minutes' time, they're going to tell me I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, well, like Saturday. Yeah. Like Saturday.
Don't you think that it has affected the way the rest of the game is judged? Like players falling down at the minimal touch, wasting time at every single kick or, push. It's almost like if it feels because the VAR is just keeping an eye on such a small little detail, like the touch on the goalkeeper, then you feel that the rest of the game needs to follow the same kind of line.
Yeah, I think the players sense weakness. They sense that they can just tell the referee and tell Stockley Park what to do now. You know, that what we saw a lot, especially in Europe last year, was a player just going down and just sitting there until the referee stops the game. And once or twice we saw a referee go, no, mate, get up. Yeah. And the guy's still trying to sit there, hoping that he will win this battle of wills.
Absolutely. I mean, when Mendy went to look at the screen, he had three Chelsea players standing over his shoulder watching it with him.
Yes.
Surely that's not allowed. Surely he should have done something about that. I mean, I think the controversy over the goal overshadowed what was throughout an astonishingly incompetent refereeing performance.
Yeah.
There's no way Loftus-Cheek should have still been on that pitch. He was booked early on and then flat-armed Antonio, clearly looking twice around to see where he is. It's not an elbow as such, but it is that flat arm that normally gets a yellow card.
Yeah, and as Henry Winter pointed out, Thiago was at it all game. Reece James, those guys, all of those are actual things that happen in the match. It almost makes it difficult to talk about the game, really, because it feels like we didn't get the result we needed. But
I just want to say one other final thing about that is I know that people say that PGMO have effectively apologised and they're not going to give us the point back. But it's not just about the point in a situation like that, is it? It's Cornet's debut goal for us. That's going to make a difference to him. You know, we get a plucky point, which I think we probably deserved against Chelsea.
I think so.
It's more than just the point, isn't it? Yeah. It's three games unbeaten as well, as opposed to, come on. So, there's loads of other factors. It's not just the point. The point probably won't matter at the end of the season. But
no.
Yeah, well, hopefully it won't. But it's just everything else that goes with that. We're on a roll. We've done well. We've drawn with Tottenham. We've drawn with Chelsea.
Yeah.
We've beaten Villa. We're on a
roll.
And that's the other factors that don't get... Sorry, Luca.
Especially after the low game that we had with Brighton. If you consider like Villa, then Spurs, and then Chelsea.
Yeah.
We were really on an up trajectory there, and that would have been like a fantastic point, almost like as if it were a three-point game. So I would say like it was a really important decision for our own season, considering that we've already played the four of the first six team in the table. So
yeah.
I know that the table doesn't look very good, but it's actually not that bad.
We were sort of okay in the first half. We'll talk about the other two games. Jim, you and I have seen all three of those games. Certainly two of them were games of two halves. And I think we've sort of seen quite a bit of that with David Moyes over the years, games where things change after halftime. We will deal with each game individually, but similarly to the Villa game, we had trouble getting up the pitch early on. We at Chelsea in the first half, Paqueta couldn't get in the game. He was sort of bought in. It's by the sound of what Moyes was saying, to sort of be a kind of number 10, provide some sort of link-up play between our central pairing and then the guys in front of him. He was finding that very difficult. Second half, much better. Second half, his contribution was much better. He was very involved in the second half. Apparently, his stats, I haven't seen them, were very good. He looked good. Do you think that was a tactical change? Do you think anything changed, or do you think they just bucked their ideas up a bit?
I felt we were. There's a bit of a sort of worrying habit of not starting games particularly well, and first halves not being as good, and having to kind of improve in the second half. Both as it's collectively, but also certain individuals. But I think for a long while now, I've noticed that Rice tends to play better in the second half than the first half, perhaps because other teams tire a little bit and he's got fantastic stamina or whatever. I don't know, but he quite often seems to sort of kind of feel he's got to haul us up by our bootstraps on his own and suddenly get stuck in. I thought we were good defensively in the first half. And I was a little bit baffled by some of the changes that Moyes made, but we did play better. I mean, definitely Paqueta came into the game, a lot more in that second half. He's going to take a little while to adjust, but I think he's going to be good. I really do.
Yeah. And it sounds like, Moyes sort of very publicly described how he would like to utilise him. I think that's... suggests he's going to play formations that place him at the heart, place him in that kind of number 10 role, because sometimes we've had this slightly amorphous three players behind Antonio that are all essentially attacking midfielders. We can't necessarily see what they're doing. Sometimes they hug the touch lines, but on the whole, they seem to have a fairly free role to all just run around and do what they like. And that does, I think, because of the personnel we have, sometimes make it difficult for us to score goals.
Yeah. Their substitutions made them better, didn't they, Chelsea? And I'm not sure ours really, really did make too much of an impact.
Yeah, I was only just going to say, I absolutely agree with Jim that we do seem to start off quietly, cautiously. There doesn't seem to be, we don't seem to be at teams at all this season, right in that first sort of 10 or 15 minutes. And I know there's this school of thought, and it's been on, on your Facebook page and that kind of thing, is just Moyes is too cautious. He's naturally defensive. He doesn't want to, his record against, they kept quoting it, didn't they, last week, his record away from home against some of those big teams, Man United, Chelsea, 67 games, and he hasn't won any of them as a manager. The counter argument is, we're way better organised than we've been for a long time.
Yeah,
but there are times when it does feel a bit frustrating. And I know that we can't be crash bang wallop. I do get that we can't suddenly treat everything like a cup tie against all the odds, and there's only 5 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like it's like a phony war in the first half, and then the second. Then we said, like Tottenham, we really got going in the second half. And it was a much better game against Chelsea. We came out and really went for it. I don't know what the answer is to that, and maybe it is just clever management.
I feel this season, certainly in the first few games of this season, lots of our players just didn't seem to get out the blocks for the first few games. Rice in the first half against Villa, and we will deal with Villa sort of on its own, but was one of the worst performances I've seen from Rice ever. And then he was really good in the second half of that game.
Yeah.
And, you know, we won that game. But I was quite keen for Cornet or sort of a possible replacement for Bowen in the second half of that game. The European goal was really good. He always might do something. He's got that sort of ability to do something. But now we have quite a lot of attacking midfielders. I wouldn't mind him getting 60 minutes and then coming off. I don't know, you know. I think Moyes has sort of slightly partly got his England aspirations in mind now that he's in the England setup. Moyes doesn't want to sort of kind of sabotage that by giving this sort of quite public demonstration of kind of taking him off after 60 minutes or something. But I feel that there's a contender for kind of fresh legs, because Cornet was really good when he came on.
I like Cornet. I think he's got a bit of energy and pace and directness about him. He's missed a couple of sitters, but you have to get into the goal scoring positions, you know, and he's found space in the box, both the one he missed in Denmark and the header against the post. You know, you've got to be in those positions, and it was, you know, it was good interplay with him and Benrahma that led to the hit in the post chance. So I hope he's not going to turn into this season's Vlasic in the, you know, he's just going to get a little sniff of a chance here, there, here and there. I think he deserves to be properly rotated in one way or another. Now we've got that's some strength in depth in those attacking areas. I hope we're going to use them and deploy them, you know, in a bit more even sort of kind of way. But we'll wait and see. My biggest concern on Saturday was Fabianski. I'm really now really wanting Areola to be our starting keeper. I thought Fabianski was at fault for the first goal, although none of us, you know, the defence did not cover itself in glory for either of the two goals. They're both soft. But I just worry there were another couple of occasions where the ball went through to him and he wasn't coming off his line, you know, nearly bobbled out once or twice, you know. I'm starting to sense that he's not inspiring confidence.
He also gets criticised for holding on to the ball, doesn't he? And not starting to let's get going.
Yeah, time and time again, people make good runs and he doesn't distribute it quickly, doesn't take that risk. Yeah, I think the time is right, really, for Areola. Obviously start on Thursday, won't he? But I'd like to see him starting in the league, to be honest.
I was very surprised when, you know, there was quite a lot of will he or won't he sign for us, will he or won't he come, seemed to be quite a lot of negotiating. It felt like we were, you know, making sure we made the right decision for this guy who is going to be our new starting goalkeeper. And when he wasn't in that Manchester City game, yeah, I was really surprised. I was really surprised. I thought it was just going to be him now, you know.
The knives are out on social media for Carer, aren't they? There's a lot of moaning about him. And I like him, actually. I know he's made some mistakes and he has to stop making those rather high-profile mistakes. But generally in his play, I really like him.
He's really good.
Into the tackle. He gets tight to people. His distribution's very, very good. You know, he wants to pass forward. Yeah, I think he's got, I think he looks classy, but there are quite a few people chuntering about him on various forums that I've read this week.
Yeah, he's probably the kind of player that defensively would like to play with a higher line, also because he's not that slow, it's fairly quick. And I think he does struggle also because physically he's not a giant. So he does quite struggle with low positions defensively. And I think he's struggling a bit to cover Soufal, which is not really inspiring confidence either. But we know why. That position is probably one of the most difficult positions where a player can play and start a season where, you know, they have to be fully fit and they have to run up and down the pitch every second. And you can see that most of the goals were were not Soufal's fault, but it was a bit late on. No, we lost the ball on a transition, and they counterattacked, and he was a bit late on recovering on his diagonal.
Yeah. I think he's been all right so far this season, Soufal. But I agree. He seems not to be able to stop a lot of crosses coming in. He doesn't seem to get a block on many crosses. But we were collectively at fault for that second goal. Rice is standing there in no man's land. He needs to go out. He's, you know, Ogbonna, you know, allows Havertz to get in front. Yeah. You know, it was just it was a sloppy goal. Both of them were really.
I think the problem is that it doesn't put enough crosses in, rather than not defending well. And I think that's one of our main problems this season, because we have Scamacca, which is quite a tall player. You want to have good crosses in, and we do struggle quite a lot with it. Also, his passes accuracy is not the highest. And with the positional kind of game and the rotation of the ball, you want to have a higher accuracy. And I think that's what Paqueta does have, compared to a lot of other players there, including Suchek and obviously Soufal.
Yeah.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Maybe let's work our way backwards. The first half against Villa was just a dreadful performance, and the second half was good. And again, on social media, there was sort of talk about, you know, the 3-5-2 was too negative. It's a terrible mistake. A lot of this, you know, what you were talking about, Mark, this kind of criticism of Moyes that he's very negative. But that 3-5-2 had been used positively only 2 days before on the Thursday. It was a way to actually get a lot of attacking players in the side. And I think he was doing the same again on Aston Villa. And I think what a lot of people just don't legislate for is that game came after three defeats, no goals, no points. And it was cagey. It's like, you know, all 11 of our players were like someone who's got a final black and the last frame of a tournament, and they're behind 5 points. But if they get this long black, they'll win the whole thing. Do you know what I mean? That sheer tension that all of them were feeling, I think, was immensely sort of hamstringing to all of the guys out on that pitch. And when Sorry,
I wouldn't disagree a word with that, Phil, except I would say that I think Villa were feeling the pressure as well.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It was shit. The first half of that game was sort of just dreadful on all counts, really. You know, we saw Emerson play much better in subsequent games. I think he just played as a sort of wing back in that game. I just don't think he trusted himself to go forward. You know, he felt he had to, you know, he's got to do the defensive part of that, you know, job, because, you know, we had to try and get 3 points. But I think at the forefront of what we had to do was not lose that game against Villa. We had to not lose that game. So in the second half, we played with a bit more freedom. Suddenly Rice got his mojo back. I've never seen Rice play as badly in the first half. You know, running around doing that that sort of come hither gesture with his hands going, someone move for me, someone move for me. It's like, I've never seen you do that before. Just put it in the path of someone and they'll run onto it. People are moving as much as they've ever moved. It's like you can't see it, or you don't think they're moving well enough for you. But also I think perhaps some of them weren't moving very well.
Yeah.
But
I mean, fair play to Moyes. You know, you changed the formation, changed personnel at halftime, and it did make a difference and changed the game. Benrahma really did make a difference when he came on at Villa. And he's been one of our best players this season for me so far.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's to have bulked out a little bit, seems to be a little bit more confident. Really good assist for what should have been the Cornet goal, you know, that hit the post. You know, taking men on a bit more, just making slightly better decisions. I think having that, just a bit of swagger about him this season, it feels to me. And, you know, he's got the flair, he's got the ability, isn't he? Just been lacking that little bit of, he's blown hot and cold. He's had some great games.
Yeah, Brighton wasn't good.
And sort of disappeared. Yeah, I wasn't live. I didn't see that live. So, people have said that was his dip. But, I mean, you know, certainly I thought he was the best player on the park at Forest. And definitely against that. And that second half at Villa, you know, it's just picking up the ball and driving with it, running with it, committing players, getting opposition players turning, you know, finding out. We're playing too much. So, I mean, very obvious against Chelsea and also the first half against Tottenham to an extent. Too many sideways passes, not enough commitment, not enough, you know, risk taking on the ball, not about, you know, and that's what happens when, as you say, Mark, you're in that run and you're lacking a bit of confidence and you don't want to be the one that makes the kind of key mistake. And, you know, hopefully we'll let's face it, we did draw against Chelsea. We'd just been denied by officialdom. And I hope they see it that way and see that week as a game where, you know, they've beaten Villa. They've played well against Tottenham and deserve to win the game. They've played pretty well against Chelsea. It's certainly restricted. We had more shots than Chelsea in that game. And in the end, the better chances in that second half and certainly should have got something out of it. And I hope that will have fed into the confidence. And we need another morale boosting win in Europe. And, you know, onwards and upwards, you hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was the Spurs game. And I thought, you know, it was one of those occasions, you know, under the lights, it's Spurs, full stadium, you know, that we couldn't... we couldn't, in all consciousness, play badly in that game, and we didn't play very well in it. You know, they were a handful. And it was the perfect way to sort of introduce Paqueta. Big, important game. I thought he did really well. He ran about. He couldn't hide in front of 60,000 fans. He really showed willing. Really good way to introduce him. On the front foot, traditional enemy. 60,000 people. Couldn't have been a better introduction for Paqueta.
I agree. Although, of course, the miss at the end when him and Emerson got in each other's way.
Yeah.
And as we're walking out, somebody said, well, they're both new signings. They probably don't know each other. And somebody said, no, they played at Lyon together last season.
Yeah,
they were in the same blooming team.
Yeah. Well, it was a bit kickball at scramble, wasn't it? Because we had them, you know, we sort of had them on the ropes. We were sort of going for the win, that thing. And I think it was like, you know, there was a sort of sense of urgency because of tick, tick, tick that slightly, you know, made rash decisions. And I think just leaving it for each other was just like, oh, fellas, you know. One of them.
But the roof would have come off. And what a debut that would have been for him. And I agree with Jim, we deserve to win that game.
Yeah,
definitely. Those second half chances, we created a lot of chances second half. Just, you know, one of those. I've got to say, I mean, we often say disparaging things at times about Antonio, though we love him. His flick for
was brilliant. It was amazing. Yeah.
If that had been one of the big names, if that had been Gabriel Jesus had done that, we would not have stopped seeing replays of it on Sky and wherever.
It was gorgeous.
It was fucking brilliant.
Although, now you know, Tottenham fans are complaining about the throw-in, aren't they? They're complaining that it was a foul throw. But anyway, let's let them complain.
When was the last time a foul throw was given?
This is a Zoom meeting and we have about 30 seconds of it left. So let's do predictions for Thursday against Steaua Bucharest.
Right. Somebody told me, I don't know if it's true, but they've got a player who was scored for Astria Gugu against us.
Right.
Was Gugu. So that's
probably got about 10 seconds, Jim.
Okay, I think 2-1 West Ham.
2-1.
They're the three off the bottom in there.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk. sportsocial.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.